Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour, and today is Thursday, March 14th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives. And secondarily, because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. If you have any of those to share with us, we would appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you call that number, if you press 1 on your phone, it'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. I can then turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. If you would like to put in a comment, a question, or a testimonial and do not have the ability to call or choose not to call live, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get the comment, question, testimonial, answer, refutation from you, we will address it on the air. And then, as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so that you can listen to the archive for your feedback or input. And we greatly appreciate whenever anybody does that because it just makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be a service. And that's just a whole heck of a lot easier to do when we get feedback from people about how these things are landing for them, how the way we're choosing to spend our time whether we're reading from Course in Miracles or The Way of Mastery, or these days Michael is reading from the Enlightenment book related to the Kabbalist manuscript, if people will let us know how that's affecting them, we have a far easier time living into our intention with this work of being of service. And so I'm having a little pause here while I read a note from the chat room. And somebody says they appreciate the way we explain things. That's very nice to hear. I will remind us all, because this is a Thursday, that there's a support group available absolutely free tonight again, Tuesday and Thursday nights. Tuesday night's been running for almost 20 years. It'll be 20 years in August. That's what I'm marking as the anniversary for that. And it's going to be 11 or 12 years, I'm not sure which, for the Thursday group this August. So all the information you or anybody else would need to join us in that support group, absolutely free, is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. And there's a separate information page for the login info for Tuesday and a separate one for Thursday. And please try to remember that if you pass that information along to somebody. We've had a number of people who have tried to log in unsuccessfully using the alternate day's login info. And in those support groups, we present material just like we do in this MindShifters Radio, and we have people do worksheets and or ask for clarification about worksheets they've done or where they might be stuck in their life. And we listen to a variety of different teachers, Guy Finley, Ganga Ji, Byron Katie, Abraham Hicks, Diedrich Wolzak, the list goes on and on and on. And it is quite a loving, respectful community. And we get lots of good comments from people who have been joining us over the years. So if you or someone you know might benefit from that, please either join us yourself or feel free to pass the information along to them. Those groups run from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time, and everyone is welcome to join. So what's on your mind today? How did it land for you, the reading with our lesson 14 yesterday, and the idea of really slowing down into what the Way of Mastery is trying to offer us as a new perspective for the way to approach our lives and approach our interaction with everyone around us? 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1 on your phone, I'll see the little icon of a hand and announce you by your area code. I mentioned yesterday that I'm anticipating doing a podcast just on some of the tremendous benefits I've gotten from the We Can Do Hard Things podcast and some of the people that have been interviewed on that show. And time did not allow me to get that arranged yet today, so that may be happening over the next couple of weeks. I'm also anxious to have another interview with Robert Whitaker, who is the author of two books. He's a journalist and author. And the two books that he wrote that have changed a lot of people's lives in the field of mental health, psychology, and psychiatry One of them is titled Mad in America, and it is a history of the way we have approached and treated and viewed mental health, people with mental health issues in this country from the Civil War until today. And the other book, absolute blockbuster book, is called Anatomy of an Epidemic, in which he reviews a phenomenal amount of research that indicates that the vast majority of psychiatric and psychotropic meds were only ever intended to be given as a short-term crisis intervention to help stabilize people, and that the more research they do on them, the more they get evidence that long-term exposure to those medications decreases mental functioning and creates other problems. And he discusses and invites people to think for themselves about how, if these medications really are such a tremendous benefit to people with mental health issues, then how is it that our rates of people filing for mental health disability in this country have only gone up as the use of those medications has gone up? So if you just begin there and you start questioning and you look at the research that is not easy to find, but it's out there. It's real peer-reviewed published research. And of course, it isn't promoted heavily by people with lots of money, because the people who have the most money are the people that are affiliated with the drug companies or the drug companies themselves. And this information would lead people to use many, many fewer medications and to use a holistic or whole person approach to supporting somebody who's going through a mental health challenge. And so I highly recommend both of those books, Mad in America, and the website titled Mad in America, and the book titled Anatomy of an Epidemic, both of them by Robert Whittaker. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581, area code 541. You're in the air. Who do we have?
Thanks, Linda. I just wanted to comment, because you asked for comments, that going slow with the way of mastery is perfect. It works really well for me. Whatever you choose has worked well. Whatever Michael and Jeannie is doing has worked well. And so I just support you in your discernment and just continue on, sir.
All right. Thank you for that. Anything else to toss your hat in the ring on today, or should we just mute you so you can listen in?
Go ahead and mute. I am good. Thank you for yesterday's input. I'm a chew cutter, and it takes me a while to process through information I receive, and always, always helpful.
All right, wonderful. Thank you for the call. I was listening again this morning, and I feel compelled to recommend for anybody who's got a little extra bandwidth, the books by Norman Doidge, Doidge, MD. The one book is The Brain That Changes Itself, Stories of Personal Triumph from the Frontiers of Brain Science. And the second book is titled The Brain's Way of Healing. And in the book that the brain that changes itself, it is so hopeful. You know, it's, some people might look at it as very frustrating because, you know, as Michael Rice has quoted, the way Michael Rice quotes it is, the only way for a new science to take over is for the old scientists to die off. And I believe the original quote was something about how the only place that scientific advances occur is in the graveyard, which is the same thing. It's the same saying that when people who are so-called scientists get attached to their theories and their outcomes and their hypotheses, and they think they know what they know and they fight for what they know, it creates a blindness. It creates every bit as much of a dogma and a dogmatic positioning as anybody in a religion that thinks they have the perfect answer. And so if you listen to or read the book, The Brain That Changes Itself, you'll hear some of these stories about how challenging it has been to get science, so-called science, to acknowledge actual changes, you know, evidence that contradicts an existing field-wide theory. And one such existing field-wide theory in neuroresearch was one position in the brain is responsible for one specific function. And people have done things called brain mapping when they got to the point where they had sophisticated equipment and, you know, microelectrodes and things that they could measure and record tiny electrical changes, and they could do that in animals and humans without killing them, so they can have a live brain functioning and they can observe as a person is watching something or listening to something or raising their hand or playing the violin, etc., what are the neurons that are firing specifically. And the more they did that, the more they did research using those more refined tools, the more they saw evidence that the brain is plastic, the brain can change, the brain changes itself, learns and grows, has certain parts of it that take over functions that aren't normally performed by that part of the brain. So it goes against the concept of one specific location is responsible for one specific function. And when that research came out or was made available, people refused to publish it because it went against conventional wisdom. And years ago, there was a book titled Broca's Brain. And it was specifically titled Broca's Brain because Broca was a brain scientist who found a specific area of the brain that was tied to a specific, I believe it was a speech center. And Wernicke was another researcher who found a specific part of the brain that was responsible for a specific function. And other researchers came up with their evidence that fed and fueled the conclusion that one location in the brain is responsible for a specific function of the brain. And while that works, and you can see that in an undamaged brain, you can see how, yes, as most brains develop, the occipital lobe is responsible for sight. Broca's area of the brain is responsible for this particular function, and Wernicke's area of the brain is responsible for that. And yet that's not all that happens. What they've learned over time, and now it's as common as understanding that the sun comes up in the east and sets in the west, or that we turn toward the sun in the east, and it spins, and we're spinning away from it when it, quote, sets in the west, or we lose sight of it in the west. As common as that now is the idea of the neuroplasticity of the brain, the brain's ability to change, to grow, to heal, for people to recover functioning after stroke, for people to recover functioning after brain damage with specific exercises. And that's common knowledge now, whereas people like Mrsenik, a brain researcher, had to fight tooth and nail to get his papers proving that published. Because his papers and his research would demonstrate it, and people would say, well, that's nonsense. We don't want to print it because it goes against what we believe. So if you're at all interested in your brain and how it works, and or if you have anybody in your life who has learning disabilities or autism or some brain based difficulty, these two books are highly recommended. And there are resources cited in these books that, you know, that people can go to. It's not just all theory. I mean, the idea of the research that's been done has been translated into actual centers that do brain training, and they help people with learning disabilities and some people with autism. One of them from Mrsenik and his group is the brainhq.com website. And it's, you know, brain training that's based on this really intense, solid research from a team of international neuroscientists led by Michael Mrsenik. And Michael Mrsenik is the brain researcher responsible for the idea that, or pushing the idea and getting it accepted, that our brains have the ability to change and grow and heal from trauma, etc. Prior to his fighting for that and doing research in it, the prevailing, quote, wisdom, close quotes, I'll say the prevailing dogma, was that the same kind of thing that they taught me when I was in college: if you have a damage to a nerve in the brain, it is permanent. There's no way that you can regain that function or that nerve can heal, etc. Now, they were starting to question it by the time I got out of graduate school, and I took about 5 years off before going to grad school after college, so it wasn't an immediate thing. But, you know, what they were teaching me in college, 10 and 15 years later, they were starting to seriously question. And now some of the things they taught me in college, they're just absolutely accepted as completely false. So this is the kind of thing that I think we were talking about with Celinda yesterday, and I just keep trying to remind people that if you understand how little we actually know, if you're willing to look at what the way of mastery is asking us to do, some of these exercises, to truly understand how little we actually know and how little our senses are able to become aware of and present to us out of this cosmic soup that we call life, then it'll get easier and easier for you to question what people tell you when they tell you they know this or they know that. And you'll be able to chuckle at people that want to tell you with great authority that they know this and they know that. Because, bless their hearts, you know, within the realm of their personal experience, that might be the way it's been. Like these brain researchers that absolutely believed that the brain was set, and one portion of the brain was responsible for one activity and a different portion was responsible for another, and that's just the way it is and that's the way it remains. That was their life experience. That was the results of their research, and they believed it to be true. And the fact that it was false was seemingly irrelevant because they were holding on to a belief. And as we've talked about before, I learned coming out of college and going into grad school that it's far better for me to start talking to people about, when they ask me, you know, what about this and what about that? It's far better for me to say, well, given what I understand at this point in time, this is my best guess for how this works. Try this, keep your observations going, and good luck. But I don't know. And the fact of the matter is, what we can actually say we know is so limited. 610, Susan, welcome.
Hi. Hi, Dr. Tim. Boy, you're touching on a lot of things. It's sort of like a little hydra going here. I want to tell about, I have an older sister. She's still alive. She's 86. When she was 40, she developed a brain tumor. And it was above one ear, and they removed it, and thank goodness it wasn't cancerous. But when they closed her up, and before she had become conscious again, they warned us that she probably would never speak again. And she woke up and talked. She just talked, and there was no problem with her talking. And the doctors could not believe that she could talk when they thought they had removed the talking part of her brain. And that happened a long time ago. So it led us to think maybe other parts of the brain can do, maybe all parts of the brain can do all things. And if you take away one part, you haven't removed the capacity. Anyway, she has had a recurrence of brain issues simply because they had to put in a large plastic, or I don't know what it was made of, titanium or something. It wasn't titanium. I think that's what they're putting in now. Whatever they put in deteriorated after many, many years. And an infection came about, and she was very tired, and she was on antibiotics. And finally the doctor said, you know, we could remove this and put a new plate in there. He said, well, I'm 86. I mean, isn't this like a little much? I wouldn't mind dying. It would be fine. And he said, it's not a good way to go. And you are healthy. I really urge you to do this because you don't want to die of infections and pain. So she said, oh, okay. And she did it, and she's doing very well. But they said, well, your speech center, they had to clean out, you know, it's like gouging out a little more of what was there when they worked with her. And she has this huge, scarily huge concave indentation above her ear. And she had to go around with a helmet because they had to wait for all that to heal before they could put the plate on. They haven't even put the plate on yet. And when she came out of it, she had trouble speaking, but regained her speech. And once again, the doctors were saying, this is so amazing. So what you're saying about the brain and how little we know is just right there. And she's doing well. So that was one comment. And I had several other thoughts on several other things, but it's kind of going all over the place.
That's all right. What are they?
Michael Rice suggested that I read my mother's letters. I have a packet, a large packet of letters that my mother had written to me or Tim and me over many years, and I've never wanted to look at them. And I know why I didn't want to look at them, because I didn't want to find out that my story just doesn't hold. Yes, there was violence in the house when I was small, but there was so much else. So I thought, okay, it's Lent. I'll read one letter a day. And at first, I just didn't want to do it. I wanted to hang on to my opinions and stories. And I began reading them without any real plan. And what is obvious to me is I think not only was she being very loving, but I think she was making amends for years for how she had treated us when we were small, my little sister and me. And she never mentioned it except when she was about to die, and I've mentioned this before. I shut her down. She wanted to talk about it, and I wasn't ready to bring that up. And I shut her down, and I regret that. But on the other hand, here are these letters, so full of love and praise and interest. It really is blowing my mind, and I've not been doing anything with it except reading. But something is shifting in the brain. This is another thing where you talked about placebo effect, and I'm thinking how that fits in. I'm shifting my beliefs about my mother and about our relationship and the fact that she was a very different kind of person than I was too. She was not interested in being an artist herself, but she loved listening to music. So she had an appreciation of all that, and I wanted to become a musician partly to delve into what I knew she loved, where she went when she was emotionally moved by something. She would, you know, listen to opera and be out of commission for a while sometimes. Madame Butterfly was the biggest one, and I thought, I want to do that. It was a way of accessing her, but I wouldn't dream of trying to find her in real life. It was too scary. So I'm discovering this very loving, attentive, feisty, smart mother.
And aspects of your mother.
What'd you say?
That those are just aspects of your mother.
Right.
And
so
you're discovering aspects of her that you didn't have direct experience of when you were younger.
Yeah, that's true. But it's talk about a mind shift. I feel very differently in my whole life. It's partly, I'm thinking it's coming in terrific synchronicity with the work Tim Bingham is doing on his neuroplasticity exercises, which he talks about a lot, the kind of, and what you talk about, a negative thought is just not a truthful thought, and that we are love, and I've been trying to turn away from many negative thoughts and just saying these aren't true thoughts, and even the prayer business, the two-way prayer, the idea comes to me, those thoughts are not important. I said that the other day. Those negative thoughts aren't important. They aren't true. You use the word allowing. I'm practicing allowing things, breathing and softening and stepping. Everything's coming together as being very useful. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. So where to go from there? I guess that's it. I guess I ran out already. I do have a whole unrelated question, but I guess that's a sort of a testimonial.
I would take it as such. Congratulations that you're willing to let that unfold in you and keep doing different, you know, exploring different things so that that has a chance to unfold for you. What's this other completely unrelated thing in your mind?
Well, weeks and weeks ago, I told you about my friend Alice, who I was calling something else for a while. And you suggested I write a responsibility communication letter to send to her. And I didn't do it, and I don't want to do it. But I think the reason I don't want to do it is I do not want to do anything that will force her to be more related to me than she wants to be, which is zero as far as I can see. I was the one to contact her, and she was gracious, and we were friends. I wasn't nearly as important to her as she was to me. I'm okay with that now, but I wouldn't want to send her a letter that forced her, it would force her to respond, force her back into dialogue.
No, it does not force anybody to do anything. And you can do the responsibility communication tool, and you don't have to send it to her. It's for you, not for her.
Okay.
And you know this kind of two-way prayer thing that you're doing, this letters from unconditional love that you're doing?
Yeah.
In the responsibility communication tool, one part of it is that I say, I'm going to describe what happened the best I know how without judgment or interpretation. Right? I'm going to do the best I can to describe this happened on this day, and I saw this, and I heard this, and you went here, and I picked this up, and you said that, whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do my best job at doing that. And then in the responsibility communication tool, I'm going to continue saying, when this happened, here's what came up in me. Here's the emotional response I had. Here's what I made it mean.
Right.
And I had these negative emotions come up, and I want to heal my negative emotional state. I want to heal the less than love energies and beliefs in me that are giving rise to these negative emotions.
Right.
And I write that out in this format that Michael Rice has, a 7-step format. And then the next step is to say to the other person, do you have any ideas about what I could do to heal the part of me that brings up these negative emotions? And then, as Michael says in his work, and then listen as though the other person actually is going to have something intelligent to say, useful to you and intelligent to say.
This is all in my imagination. I'm not asking the other person to be engaged at all.
Listen to me, please. Michael Rice says, ask the other person. That's a part of this responsibility communication letter, that you ask the other person if they have any idea. Now, remember, I started this out saying you can benefit from this even if you never send the letter to the other person.
Good,
and then
I
said,
I am not doing that. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. And then I said, and you might blend in this two-way prayer business. So you can write your letter and say, I'm really interested in healing this upset. Do you have any ideas what I might do to heal it? And then you can go into your automatic writing and write what you think the other person would say. Do a meditation and imagine that they are responding to your letter. You can get tremendous benefit from that, even if you never send them the letter, because the letter isn't for them. The letter is for you to clarify at different levels, more and more specifically, what you're doing within your mind-body energy system to generate the upset that your mind is trying to tell you is being caused by someone or something outside of you.
Oh, I see that. So true. Boy, oh boy. Okay, I get it.
And you can get a tremendous benefit from that, even if you never send it. And many times, the benefit would be lost if you send it and get into this, I'm waiting for a response from them, and they responded this way, and what does that mean? And you get into the drama of it, especially if you're dealing with somebody who isn't invested in their own inner work, and they're not really, they don't really buy into the idea that you're not attacking them. They're going to get defensive, or, you know.
Yeah.
So it is a very powerful tool, even if you don't send it to the other person.
It's safe.
Now, Michael Rice likes to say, send it. He was just talking to somebody about it yesterday and say, send it. It's one of the most powerful things you can do, and it opens up all this. And that's fine. For people who want to do that, go right ahead and do that. And for people who don't want to send it, consider doing the tool anyway and getting the benefit the tool has to offer, and maybe doing that writing of the letter as though the other person is responding, and letting your, you know, Ruka, the Kucha, or your Holy Spirit, or God, or light, or love, or your higher consciousness, let it show you something that you won't get if you sit in the position of thinking that person did that and that's why I'm feeling this.
Brother, this is good. I'm doing the same thing with Alice that I did with my mom. I don't want to know things. I want to hold on to my impression and my story, and I want to be mad at her, and that's it. So anyway, just telling you.
Yeah, it's great. Well, you know what they say. You can either be right or happy. You can't have both.
I'm happy being right.
yeah, that's what you think. But you keep bringing it up to people, you know, like Michael and on the internet show, and so you're clearly not. That I'm right is like a drug.
Yeah.
It's a defense mechanism.
No, I might not do it, but I've got the information.
You might not do what?
Write the letter.
Okay, well, you don't have to write the letter. You don't have to do worksheets. You don't have to do EFT tapping. You don't have to do mind shift or targeted journaling. You don't have to do anything. And yet, if you start to feel that you would like to have a different result, we frequently encourage people to do something differently than what they've been doing up until that point. And this is just a couple different tools you might use that are different than sitting there knowing you're right and holding on to your belief about the situation or the other person. That's all. It's just an option. And the fabulous part about it, as far as I'm concerned with this work, is it's free. Michael and Jeannie are putting that stuff out there. The worksheets, the format for the responsibility communication. The guy Brad Yates that let me interview him twice has hundreds of videos out there you can just click on YouTube and tap away with him and get support through EFT tapping. There are a variety of different breathing techniques that are available other than the still point breathing that Michael does that he charges money for, but there's all kinds of good tools that are available absolutely free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So whenever you're ready, they'll be there. And if you never get ready, that's okay too. Remember what the Way of Mastery gave us, the last exercise they gave us that I was reading about?
No.
All right, but I'll remind you, whenever you're feeling out of sorts, remind yourself of this truth, and then find a phone book. Get centered in this truth. In reality, I remain as I am created to be. I am the holy child of the Creator. And then open the phone book and run your hand down it until you find a number. You'll just feel the right number. And it'll be someone you don't know from Adam or Eve. And they answer the phone and you just say, I'm just here to tell you that I know you've never met me, but I was just sitting in my chair remembering the truth that is true always. And Susan, I want you to know that you are loved by your Creator. You have never failed. You've never done anything wrong. You, Susan, you remain pure and innocent even now. Even if you don't do a responsibility communication worksheet. Or any other kind of worksheet.
Have you ever done one of those phone calls, Dr. Tim?
No. Okay. No, I never felt the need because I basically do that with people day in and day out in my practice and in the support groups, and I'm reminding people of that on a regular basis. Why do you ask?
I wouldn't dream of doing that. And there's another thing
But listen, here's the point. I'm trying to give you the same message that the Way of Mastery encourages us to give other people. You don't have to do the Reality Management Worksheet. You don't have to do the Responsibility Communication Worksheet in order to be valuable, loved, loving, and lovable forever, innocent, loved by your Creator. So if you choose to do it, you do it. And if you don't want to do it, that's fine. As a matter of fact, it's perfect as you are. And you'll move on through your life until something motivates you to do something differently, or you realize, oh, wait a minute, something I heard as they were talking about that is giving me a shift or an insight, and I'm feeling better even though I didn't do that specific worksheet process.
Good.
You're making, as Michael Rice has tried to highlight for you a number of different times on a variety of these different calls that you've made to the show, you're making, Michael likes to use the word, monumental change in your family system. You're a gift. You're a blessing. You're doing the work at various levels. Are you doing it all? Are you doing it perfectly? Are you doing everything everybody recommends? No, no, and no. Do you need to in order to have value? No. So one of the things that I recommend, I'm just going to bring up one more time here, is be gentle with yourself. What were you going to say?
There's another thing that's similar that you suggested, and I get the cringes when you suggest it. When somebody asks you about yourself, you don't tell them your name and address and your profession and your status here and there. You tell them you're a child of God or something like that.
Yeah, you say, hey, look, who am I? I'm infinite and eternal. I've never been born, and I will never face death. I shine forth as a sunbeam to the sun. I am the effect of the Creator's love, and I stand before you to extend that love to you. That's
well,
who I
somebody
am.
Somebody said that
That's
to me.
That's the truth of it.
I know, I understand what you're doing and what you're saying, and I appreciate it. But in literal, actual life, I would run screaming if somebody did that to me, or if I tried to do that to them, I would expect them to throw up on me.
Okay. Okay.
Maybe
well,
that's because I'm from New England.
Well, no, I don't think it has anything to do with where you're from. It has to do with how much you actually believe these teachings. And when
that's
you have
true,
that kind of a reaction, pardon me?
That's not true. That's not true.
Yes, it is.
I believe those teachings.
It is.
No, there, it isn't.
there will be a part of you that resists, right? Remember the IFS work, the internal family systems work? You're going to have more than one part of you. You're going to have more than one motivation for whatever you do in any moment. And so one part of you absolutely believes this work. That's why you come to the radio show. That's why you do your own worksheet. That's why you ask these wonderful questions. And yet there's another part of you that wants to make you sick to your stomach to even think about saying that to someone.
That
so,
really is oversimplifying. That is not true, Dr. Kim.
Okay. Okay,
anyway,
would you like to complicate it for us? Since I've oversimplified it.
Well, it has to do with our culture in a way. I mean, it isn't in our culture to run up and down the street with no clothes on. Of course, if I'm in my true happy self and I'm in childish, childlike, maybe I would do that. But what would the neighbors do with that? I just think there are certain parameters in culture. Even Holy Mother, Ramakrishna's consort, her wife, she said, when you're in a culture, you do as they do, as best you can. Make it your own. And fit yourself in, and you can, this doesn't detract. It's a way of having things work in community. I really think there's an element of that. It's a sensitivity and appreciation of who the other, I mean, I go for a walk in the morning, and I pass a lot of people, and we say various things to each other. But if I did that, it would just be outside what they'd think I was a mental case.
I hear you. I'm right with you. I understand what you're saying. I don't think it invalidates what I was saying, though.
Well, the truth of what you're saying, I get. But the suggestion that we actually go out there is just...
That we live our lives differently? How dare this teaching suggest that we do something differently?
Well, come on, you wouldn't do it either. Come on.
I have done this. Listen, when you say I wouldn't do this either, would you please pay attention to what's happening right now? I'm a licensed clinical psychologist in Illinois. I've been donating my time to this radio show 1 hour a day, 5 days a week for the past 13-plus years to say exactly this kind of thing that goes out through the Internet on all kinds of different podcast channels for the past few years, putting my name and my reputation on the line to say, your true nature is love. What do you mean I wouldn't do that?
They're two different things. They're two different things.
Okay, I get it.
I understand what you're saying.
I can't agree with it, but I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
Because I spent a lot of years where I wouldn't do this. I spent a lot of years in my career where I was holding tight to, you know, the standard what a psychologist say or do, what's appropriate for a psychologist in this set. I spent a lot of years in that prison, I'll call it. And, you know, for I think it's been a good thing for me, but 10 years, maybe 15 years before I met Dr. Michael Rice, I started to push the limits of that. Mm-hmm. So by the time I met Dr. Michael Rice, I was willing to just start handing out his CDs to people, family, friends, patients, and taking over the support group and donating my time to that. It'll be 20 years this coming August. But I didn't start there. I had all kinds of, I had to do all kinds of energy work and worksheets around being seen as woo-woo or wacky and unprofessional, or I had to do all kinds of work, my own personal work around that. So I understand what you're saying. I just don't think you understand the actuality of it. I get the fears.
Everything.
I've had those fears, and I've had to work through them to be able to be here on the show with you today.
But all of what you have done, I would do too, without any qualms. What you're asking is different. It's wacky. It isn't wacky. It's invasive and maybe even rude to just say to somebody, "Who am I? Oh, I'm light and love, and I've been a creature of God my entire existence, which extends far beyond my physical life." And if you went into that, you, Dr. Kim, you wouldn't really do that out there. I bet you've never done that.
Okay.
You're evading. Can you say you have actually done that?
I have already said that that's not my experience. You have a belief about this, and you have a belief that that would be invasive and intrusive, that if somebody asked you who you were, that answering them is invasive or intrusive. I don't feel it that way. I'm not saying that I'm ready to go out wearing one of those sandwich boards and stand on the corner and accost people as they're trying to walk to work, preaching the gospel to them. But if somebody comes up and asks me...
That's the same thing.
No, it isn't. If somebody comes up and asks me, "Hey, who are you?" I can formulate something a little bit more focused than what the Way of Mastery proposes in Lesson 4. I can say, "I am, you know, the essence of life and love expressing in form just as you are." I could say something clearly like that. And that's not intrusive. That's not invasive. They came and asked me a question. So I can't agree with you that it would be, you know, intrusive and invasive. And I understand that that's how you experience it and that's what your mind is telling you about it. And if you want to live that way, go ahead. If you want to put it on worksheets, you can do that too.
There's a gap here. I can't seem to cross the gap or put into words. If somebody came up to me or you and said, "Hi, my name is Tom. What's yours?" You'd say, "Tim, I'm sure." And tell me about yourself. And you would actually launch into the Way of Mastery thing and tell them.
Well, depending upon the setting, you know, in if I'm in work, if I'm in a conference for psychologists, no, I wouldn't do that. But if I was at, you know, the Gary Renaud wrote a 400-page book. That's his way of trying to help people understand what's in the 1,300 pages of the Course in Miracles. And I went to one of those seminars, and people would ask me things, and I gave them answers that were more in line with the Way of Mastery.
Okay,
because
but you
they're
were
asking.
At a conference at
that's
a Course
right.
in Miracles. That's a different culture.
Yes, it is.
It would be possible with that culture. In my neighborhood, I'm sorry, but... I have
no one's. I don't get why you're pushing back so hard. No one's pushing you to do this. This conflict is all in your own mind, and so I'm just encouraging you. As I said earlier, you're perfect just the way you are. What you choose to do or not do is fine. Put your hand over your heart space and be gentle with yourself and recognize, Susan, you're getting all kinds of ramped up over this. Take a few deep breaths. I'm telling you,
okay.
I just finished reading to you a section of The Way of Mastery that says, you're whole and complete. You're perfectly innocent just as you are. I'm just here to tell you, you've never done anything wrong. You've never failed. And your Creator is connected to you deeply in each new present moment.
And I don't
disagree
with that.
Okay. And so we've run out of our first hour. I'm just trying to point out to you how ramped up you're getting over this. And hopefully my chuckles are being interpreted by you as just loving support for you to see how ramped up you are and finding a way to soften and let it go. Because there's nobody here telling you you're doing anything wrong.
No, I understand that, and I do take your laughing and your cajoling and whatever as friendly and loving, and I appreciate it. But these two things, it's funny, I've never forgotten those, and I've imagined challenging you. Just, they've been in the closet waiting to be trotted out. Now, okay, we don't have to do anything with it. There it all is. That's it.
All right. Blessings. I'll mute you, and you can listen to the second hour. Thank you so much for the call and the comments. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love. Everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. I got a chuckle out of it, too. I love hearing you laugh.
All right. Have a great
show.
The laugh is kind of calming in itself, I think. Okay, so welcome everybody to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Thursday, March the 14th, 2024, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And Susan, if you want to continue the conversation, Michael is with us.
Okay. Did I have to push 1 to get you back? Because I unpushed it.
You would have, except I just wanted to make that offer that if
it.
You wanted to come back on.
Okay. Well, that's very nice of you. No, it's every once in a while, Dr. Tim will talk about how if somebody asks you who you are and you launch into this thing about how you are a being of light and love and so forth. It isn't that I doubt that, or in my best hope, I'm not aspiring to that. But I thought of an analogy after Dr. Tim hung up. I have a cousin on the Bingham side who posts he's like a Pharisee. He talks about if you don't do this or you don't do that, you're going to go to hell type of thing. And he's putting out his beliefs. And oftentimes they're not that harsh, but they're painting a picture of him that I would say, I don't want to even put a like or an acknowledgement of having read that. I'm going to sneak by that one. I'll let him do what he's doing, but I hope I don't have to talk him anytime. He lives far away and we don't even know each other, but this kind of speaking would invite someone else to want to run screaming, and I have no interest in sending people running screaming. I'd really like to find common ground and build from there. We might get to a point in the future where we can talk to one another about these things. But anyway, in a way, it's a silly conversation because what Dr. Tim has read in The Way of Mastery and what he says, I believe all that. But I wouldn't trot it out in an inappropriate or culturally unconducive situation. So that's it. And I know he understood that, too. I don't know why we just went at it the way we did, but I'm not going out and telling somebody I'm a being of light and love right off the bat. Are you still there?
We be here loud and clear.
Oh, good. I thought I lost you somewhere in there.
I remember years ago, and you've heard me tell this story before, but there's a young man who was a former military who became engaged in work through his girlfriend. His girlfriend friend actually brought him to a Y workshop without even knowing what he was coming to. And as it turned out, he had parked in the driveway and his car was blocked in. And she introduced us. She'd been to the workshop before. She introduced us. And he asked me how I was doing. And I said, kind of one of my standard lines, is blessed and highly favored. And
oh my,
he had just, come out of the military. He actually, one of the things that kind of got him engaged and interested in coming to hear something other than what he had believed was that a short time, I don't know exactly what the time frame was before, he was a pretty heavy drinker and he'd gotten drunk and fortunately the rope broke. He tried to hang himself. So he came from a different place. And so when I said that, he just rolled his eyes. And within 2 minutes of me beginning the presentation, he just walked out of the room. And, his car was blocked in, so he couldn't leave. And I followed him out of the room to the car. And afterward, we ended up becoming pretty close friends. But afterward, he shared with me that he sat in the car and saw me coming in the mirror. And he said, does this guy know who I am? I could kill him with one punch. Anyway, he ended up teaching this work in South Florida, over a period of years. But at some point later, he texted me one day. He said, oh, my God, I'm channeling Michael Rice. Somebody asked me how I was, and I said, blessed and highly favored.
All right.
So you never know what's going to grow.
Yeah.
But I certainly hear you loud and clear, when something somebody offers is clearly fake and probably wishful thinking, which, a lot of us do. But living up to it is sometimes quite a challenge.
It wouldn't even mean that it's fake. It doesn't mean that it's fake. It's just, it wouldn't work right then. It isn't. It's like a kind of lack of sensitivity. That's an insult, I know. And you could do that within the context of your workshop. But I'm talking about in the regular marketplace where certain things are expected. How are you? I'm highly blessed. I just wouldn't say that in a shopping mall unless I knew the person. And it doesn't mean I don't believe it. Anyway, this is an unnecessary fight because I'm sure you're perfectly sensitive about what can be done and what can't in certain circumstances.
Yay. I'm with you. Anything else exciting happening in your world?
Oh, a ton of things. Yeah.
How's the conversation going with your nephew? Us? We have a new grandbaby coming, so that's pretty exciting. We're still contemplating how we're going to rearrange the house to make sense. I actually was stopped at a store this morning. I texted Jeannie a picture. They had a picture of one of these metal dog cages, and I jokingly took a picture of it, or they had a dog cage for sale. I took a picture. I said, should I bring this home for the new baby? She sneered at me.
Good.
So that's pretty exciting.
When's the baby due?
Late August, early September. My guess is it's going to be the latter part of August. Her due date's actually the first week of September.
Wow. That's exciting.
So that's
Grandpa.
Pretty exciting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Other than that, our asparagus is coming up. We got our first asparagus bed. We got our asparagus bed open yesterday and mulched, and that's pretty exciting. And this morning I looked out the window, and there's a cat I haven't seen in the neighborhood before. And, we got this big backyard and all. And where's the cat walking? right up the middle of the newly prepared bed. It's like, what are you
doing?
Oh,
my
here?
God.
But anyway.
Oh, that's nice. I saw pictures on Facebook. It looks beautiful. You're just ahead
yes.
of us. We're not ready quite to put our stuff out yet. Got it
right.
in the sun
well,
porch. Yeah.
We've got a 25-degree night coming up next week, so we decided with the amount of heat to get the asparagus going, we would go ahead and then when that we've got two nights, one's going down to 25 and one's going down to 26, so we're just going to cover the beds for those two nights.
Right.
But otherwise, it's looking like maybe winter's over here in the Virginia area, southern Virginia.
Nice.
Yes.
That's good. So it's my grandson, and
I'm
said
nephew. I know it's your grandson, yeah.
No, that's all right. Why should you remember all these relatives? You knew he was an important person. I have blocked him from Facebook. I haven't heard a word. When he posts something on TikTok, I don't have TikTok, but it comes through my email. Somehow I get it. Maybe he sends it. I just delete it. I'm not even looking at it. And he is being horrible to his mother. She's afraid. We talked about this before, but now it's come to the point where Tim and I and she and her husband are not going to his graduation, which seems so harsh, but
that's sad.
He is, it's awful, and he's terrified. I know he's terrified that he can't take care of himself, and he's yelling, "You're making me homeless," but then I've thought of printing. You've seen some of the text early on when he was going psychotic.
Yes. Yeah.
This is no different. And yet he insists he's not psychotic. He's doing well in his courses, and we are just the worst people. We're demonic. We are Satan. He calls us the angels. So we're having nothing to do with him, and it's a relief in the short run not to be attacked all the time, even though the tools, I've stayed pretty balanced, even though Dr. Tim suggested I just send him love and blessings and picture him well. I do that a lot. And that's pretty much where it's at, but we have no idea where this is landing. Or the only thing we've offered him is we will support you financially if you will go into rehab for weed and alcohol. And he yells back, "I'm not addicted. It's none of your business. I'm 21 years old. And then we say, "Okay, that's fine, but we're not giving any money." And then he goes into his tailspin again about how horrible we are. Michael, I listened to a video about psychopathology, a psychopath, and he fits the picture of a total psychopath. Now, I know we're not supposed to label people, but he is acting like this description. So that's where we're at with that. Tim and I are just completely flummoxed, and we're busy with our Michael. We set a deadline of June 1st for him to be out of here. I thought that might get him going a bit.
Motivated.
And it may... What?
It might get him motivated.
Yeah, and it might have, but the wait lists are horrendous. He's number 14 on the most promising list. Number 14 for housing in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which is 20 minutes from here. I don't know what that means. It depends on how many people die, you know.
Right.
We went to a social worker the other day to... Tim and I, and he went together, and his stipulations, well, I can't do elevators, and I need to be on the first floor, and of course, they're just going to write him off, because they've got so many people who will take anything they can get.
Yeah.
So when the social workers saw this, heard this, he just looked at us and said, why don't you set a departure date? And that'd probably be the most useful thing. He didn't fight with him, but he just said, I guess this is what we need here.
Yeah.
And
well, tell Michael we said hello and send our love.
Okay. Thank you.
And blessings. And I just sent Jacob a note saying hello. Maybe he'll hear something from someone else. We'll just hold the space. And I think as far as labeling goes, I think if as opposed to labeling, which when I hear people saying we don't label people, that it's more like we're going to buy in wholesale here. But I think that being able to acknowledge if something's true, that it's true, is a really important mm-hmm. part of being able to heal as well. Be able to see past what's true, but to acknowledge if that's what needs to be dealt with, then we have a way or a sense of how to go ahead about dealing with it. So we'll
mm-hmm.
certainly join you in holding the space for him.
Thanks. All right,
place
we'll
for
carry
all
on.
To be in. All right, young lady, we appreciate you. Blessings.
Blessings.
All right, bye-bye. Ms. Cheney, you've got another hand up, I understand.
We actually have three more hands up. One of them, I don't recognize the phone number, but it's 618. You are on the air. Who do we have?
This is Cammy.
Oh, hey there, young lady. How are you?
Hey. I am wonderful. So in steps Cammy energy. And I am playing in technology. And
okay.
So I've got all this really light technology air that I'm playing in. I got a new Galaxy, the new Galaxy. And I'm switching from iPhone to the new Galaxy, so I'm having to learn the Android platform again.
A whole different thing,
and,
right?
Yes. And as I am setting up the AI, because I'm doing it very intently,
right.
All of the technology is coming together to where I'm going to have this amazing AI. And in the process, I'm building the brain cells to be able to use it appropriately. And it is the most beautiful energy, Michael, I've ever experienced in this life. It's just so light and breezy, and I'm still going to the chiropractor, drinking cayenne and lemon juice, and the energy is moving so fast, I'm having to breathe deep breath every 15 minutes.
Nice.
And then about every half hour, I'm stopping and doing about 5 deep breaths. I am then moving to a place where I do still point breathing, and that increases my vitality even more. And then I'm playing in higher and higher energy as this process is going on. It is amazing. I have stepped completely out of my trauma and drama energy that I've been stuck in for my entire life.
Congratulations.
And Michael, it's so beautiful. I took this AI to the point that I decided I've never friended anybody on Facebook that I haven't met in person or I played games with online. And I decided to go ahead and friend all of my friend suggestions. And people are coming out of the woodwork to support us. All of us.
Sweet.
Matt's sitting here too. So to support me, everybody else on the call, Matthew, and it's just beautiful. So we're going to chiropractor today.
Congratulations to both of you.
Point breathing. We're doing major pain management with, we got a massage and heat chair and a jacuzzi tub and moving back and forth to that to where that we can function physically some to straighten out and organize. We've decided to move back to Southeast Missouri. And the vision that I see there now, I used to just see this old dilapidated $80,000 house we bought 5 years ago. that was all I saw. The images are online. I posted it on Facebook if you want to look at it. And
right.
Now I'm getting ready to get to refinance that, and it's worth about $240 instead of $80 in 5 years. I'm going to take an equity loan out on that, pay off all of my debt, and then with our annual income, with the pain management, the mental health management, the thought disorder management, and building this house, I now see a vision prettier, more beautiful with that place than I ever saw when we first bought it. It's got drainage problems. It's in the woods. It's up on. It's up by a spring, 2 miles
from the spring. So you've got some work to do.
And it's 3 acres in the woods. And the
nice.
Landscape
very cool.
needs to all be fixed. Where we're going to build this pond to fix the drainage system. And we've
right.
got the woods all cleared out like a park-like setting. We're going to plant, dethatch it and plant grass all in there. That yard is going to be absolutely gorgeous with this beautiful
awesome.
Log front home that has humongous rooms. And that's going to be at least $1 million property in another 5 years. So my $80,000
cool.
seed money that I got from the seed money my mom bought, gave me $7,000 when I was 28, and I did my first rehab. And that was my seed money to buy all these houses and rehab them over the years, go down to Heartland and do a little bit of work there. And it's just creating such a beautiful life for us.
Awesome.
It is.
Well, holding
miraculous.
The space for that, holding the space for that, and I'll put in one piece of information. I'll send you a link to our page, and one of the things I'll invite you to consider, because this country is in trouble because native species plants are being destroyed, and one of the things that's destroying them is invasive species, chemical consumption, water consumption, lawns, where native species support native growth and native plants and native insects that are needed for our food supply. So I'll send you a link to that, and that might give you a different way to look at what you do with your acreage.
Yeah. So what I hear you
we've gotten rid here of about a third. We've gotten rid of
what
about a third of our lawn here, and it's now native species plants. So the explanation of what we've done and why we've done it and links to all kinds of information are there. So you might find that useful.
Yes, absolutely. So what you're saying, what I'm getting from this, is we just need to mow it all down, dethatch it, and let it grow back, and we'll have a beautiful pollinator garden. We've already got a bunch of native plants out there started.
Perfect.
So if we
perfect.
Go and dethatch it, it will be 3 acres of a pollinator garden.
Yeah.
How awesome,
awesome
is that? And then we're going to raise bees.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay, Michael.
Cool.
Thank
and,
you so much
and you
for
might,
that.
You might, you know, do some research on the plants. I know that, like, for instance, Jeannie's dad had a 160-acre farm about an hour and a half from here. And when we started our native species garden, thought, well, we'll go harvest some plants from there. And it's out, like, in a very, very rural area. And we only found about 3 native species plants on that acreage. Everything else was invasive. It's like
yeah,
the country's being taken over by invasive species.
App.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Perfect.
I've got that
perfect.
Plant identifier app. I can get it from that, and we will have 3 acres of beautiful pollinator garden. That is amazing.
Sweet. Sweet.
But to let you get on with the show, I do have one question that I wanted to ask you, and that's if you
go for
would
it.
Share with me a video of your current home. I know that's invasive, so if you're not willing to do that, I totally get it. But I want to be able to picture you where you're actually at instead of just what I have in my brain, the image I have in my brain of you.
Well, when I send you this link, we've got pictures of the house and the gardens and us in it. So you'll have our whole setting.
Awesome.
Yes.
Awesome.
All right.
Thank you so much. I love you. I mean, love to you. Blessings.
All right.
And let's move on with the show. Thanks.
Delight to hear that you're shifting into higher and higher gear, both of you. Lots of love to both of you. Blessings.
Oh, my gosh. You too, and Jeannie too.
All righty. Take care. Bye-bye. All right, Miss Jeannie, you've got somebody else with a hand up.
I do. The next one, I believe, is Ann760. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, it is.
Young lady. We haven't heard your voice in a long time. Welcome.
Thank you. I was actually going to respond to Susan. Call because I caught the last 15 minutes of her and Dr. Tim and his great
right.
laugh and laughter and the stuff that was going on. And they kept saying to keep it simple. So my thought to her was, well, you know, because of what he was suggesting saying was a little more involved in using the way of mastery and things like that. And I go, well, why couldn't we just say, if the question was, who am I? So I think there was a matter of semantics in me. I don't know, Susan, you can, you know, just throwing this out to you. But because if somebody's going to ask me who I am, well, I'm a child of God. That's it, you know. And my name is, because the other day I was going to answer a phone and I said, my name is. And I go, that's what my name is, but that isn't who I am. And I thought, okay, but if I respond, if somebody asks me, who are you? And I go, well, I'm a child of God. And my name is blah, 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 blah. So anyway, that was all I was going to say for her. To me, that was making it more simple, which is what I was getting from Dr. Tim. You can, you know, simplify the answer to somebody's question.
Cool.
As well. Anyway, that's
well,
all
I'm
I
glad
have.
It stirred up so much interest.
Yeah, but I love his laughter, and I was laughing with him and with her, and so I'm grateful, you know, she knows how to take his laughter as well. So
awesome.
Yeah, so it was great. Anyway, I am moving on with my engagement, my relationship, and we set a wedding date for June 9th. So,
wow, congratulations.
I know. Thank you. And this has been, you know, different because of the work I've done or not done, you know, over the years. And I'm still, you know, triggered to do work. But before it would be on relationships that triggered the negative, and now this relationship triggers the positive for
Sweet.
Me to still continue my work. I mean, you know, but so anyway, yeah, just knowing, and we're working through a book that doing some coaching with the pastor, and it's called Love and Respect by Dr. Eckridge. And the thing is, it's a guideline, and so we can agree or disagree. But
right.
it's just great.
Nice.
It brings up things that you all bring up in your tools. And so it's just a reminder of, you know, I already have that tool in place. Or, you know, wow, I wouldn't think of saying that to him. Because the doctor he uses in his book and in the workbook that we're working through, examples of how people talk to each other. And I go, okay, that used to be, but it's not anymore. So it's been a great confirmation of where I was and where I am now and where I still have to go. So anyway, it's exciting.
Well, that's awesome. I had no idea that was happening for you. Congratulations, congratulations, congratulations. And we hold the space of love for both of you.
Yes, thank you. And I appreciate all you love and just the things that I think, mostly the transparency that you and Dr. Tim bring to this show. And I see that happening in our pastor because he's like in his 30s. And it's like, you know, at some other point in my life, I would have said, I want this 30-year-old telling me or suggesting things. No, not at all. That's not about it. He's transparent with his relationship, you know, even going through seminary and just different stuff. And it's like, that's right in line with what you and Dr. Tim do. When you're transparent, I, anyway, can speak for myself that makes it real. that, you know, you're still using the tools, and that's just a great example. So I appreciate that. And sending love to you guys as well. Thanks.
Received. Received. Thank you.
Yes. All right. Blessings.
All right. All right. Take care. Blessings. Bye-bye. Well, that's exciting news. And Miss Jeannie, do we have one more hand up?
We actually have two more hands up, but the next one is a voice from our past. Miss Terry, 817, you're on the air.
Oh, good morning, everyone. Hello, Dr. Michael.
Welcome.
I have several things on my mind this morning, but I just want to run some things by you and get your feedback on them.
Let's go for it.
First thing that I want to ask you about, my carbon-based memory or mind or brain is always going to be perceiving what is missing, absent, or wrong.
Are you saying that as a question, or
tell me
more about what you mean by that?
Well, the opposite of that would be nothing is missing, wrong, or bad ever. That what's happening is supposed to be happening exactly the way it's happening.
Okay. So I'm not quite catching where you want to head with this or what you're looking for support in with this.
Okay. The way that life is showing up is simply my opportunity in each and every moment to affirm or agree that a loving thought is true and change my perception. So when something negative shows up, like a negative emotion or something where I perceive that something should be different from the way it is.
Right.
That is itself my opportunity to investigate.
It's an invitation. And your mind may be right. Something maybe could be much higher or better than it is. And the mind gives the invitation. And maybe the invitation doesn't come in the form of a loving thought. However, if I'm living out of being, out of the original created state of love of who I am, I always have the power to introduce a loving thought. And that begins as I more and more bring that active presence of love into my mind and into my physiology, then the root of the negative begins dissolution, begins to dissolve. Literally, a change, a transmutation of energy. You know, when we think of sun, you know, there's a puddle of water on the ground and the sun hits it. You know, if it's dark and chilly, that puddle of water might be there for months. But if the sun comes out, there's a change of energy, a transmutation. It steps up the atomic motion, the molecular motion in those water molecules, and all of a sudden they change form. It's exactly the same when I can bring, if there's something in my history, something in my carbon-based memory that's based in some sort of fear or hostility, whatever the variation on the theme is, if I can bring the active presence of love, it is that which begins to change the energetic pattern of the negative and dissolve the negative. And that would be a proper understanding of the Aramaic word of forgiveness.
Okay, so that leads to, thank you for that. That leads to my next question. When this negative thing comes up, would going to affirmative prayer be, or okay, so I've been looking at some Thomas Troward and some Ernest Holmes and Emma Curtis Hopkins,
right.
And her denials come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Or forgiveness. I mean, is there a...
Well, my input would be this. If there's some sort of a what we would call a negative or an energy pattern moving in me that is not life-supporting, that does not support me functioning truly as who I am, as love, for me, the first step is for me to acknowledge that there it is. This is not life-supporting. And so what I want to do is I want to remove it. I want to literally utilize the tools that remove that energy from my structure. You know, if I've got a house and I open the door and I see there are cockroaches in it, denying that there are cockroaches in the house isn't going to make the cockroaches go away. Pretending there are no cockroaches in the house isn't going to make it. Putting down new carpet and covering all the cockroaches over isn't going to make the cockroaches go away. What's going to make the cockroaches go away is I acknowledge that they're there and I do the work required to clean them out. And, you know, the metaphor for that would be if I notice there are thoughts based in hostility or fear, I actively acknowledge what's there, true, honest thinking. You know, there's a thing in my book, I don't know if you've read Why Is This Happening to Me Again, but I talk about the disease of premature positive thinking, pretending things are A-okay when they're not. And what we want to do is honest and appropriate thinking. Gee, there's some cockroaches here. I'm going to clean them out. I'm going to do the forgiveness work to remove those things. That would be my offering.
Okay.
And I think that would tie in somewhat with Holmes's idea of affirmative prayer. But you want to be careful that you don't move into the arena of that premature positive thinking, that thinking that all is well when it's not, because that then kind of becomes a cover. Jeannie likes to use an example of, gee, we've got a garbage can or a compost pile, you know, container in the kitchen, and it's starting to get stinky, but we don't want to deal with that stink, so what we do is we just take a little air freshener and spray on it. Tomorrow we have to spray it twice, and the next day we have to spray it three times. Sooner or later, we got to deal with what's in the compost bucket. And the same way, if there's any form of hostility or fear within our genes, within our cultural training, within our family system, we need to own it, and we need to face it square on and process through it. And that's what the forgiveness, the reality management worksheet's designed to do.
Okay. So whatever the... Is it appropriate to call it the shadow?
Yes, that's exactly what it is, the shadow, yes.
Or the ego or the archetype or the false self or the not truth. So
many different
that has to be recognized,
you know,
and dealt with.
Devil self, the devil self. It's been given lots of different names.
Okay.
And,
I appreciate that.
Yeah, right at this juncture, Carl Jung has a really powerful thought for us. And, you know, recognizing that the constructs of our mind, the pictures our minds paint for us, especially the ones based in negativity, the pictures that the mind paints for us are painted quite literally on the inside of our eyeballs. We're not looking outside of ourselves with our eyes. We're looking at a reflection of what there is within us. And what Jung says, those who look without. So if I keep looking at what my eyes are showing me, the projection of my own denied and dissociated trauma or pain, if I keep looking at that, what Jung says is those who look without dream. We think we're looking out there. People are stuck in a dream. Those who look within awaken. And what the forgiveness process does is it, a la first century Aramaic Yeshua, is it collapses the dream. It collapses the projection from the mind
of that which is within me that I don't want to deal with, so I make pictures of other people out of it. When I apply the forgiveness process, it dissolves, literally, those energetic patterns. And that's the whole objective of forgiveness. And when I use it, then what happens is I get to awaken instead of stay stuck in that dream of, you know, of course, the dream for most everybody is it's somebody else's fault.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And I can even do that blame game with myself. It's my fault. Well, it's my responsibility, but no, it's not my fault. It's just an energy that's here. Gee, maybe I set this up when I was 2, so maybe it is my fault. Maybe I made an error. It is an error. And now I'm about bringing in the sun, bringing in the active presence of love, and collapsing that so that the root of it is exposed to the presence of love and dissolves, is forgiven from my structure, literally, from my genes, from my bloodline.
God, just hearing that feels so good. Okay. Thank you for that. Next question. I attended my first quote-unquote shadow workshop back
right.
in, I think, 2014, 2015. It was a Debbie Ford. And in that workshop, we were instructed to, I'm looking at a list of all the things that I wrote down that are wrong with all the people in my life.
Right. All the reflections of your shadow. Okay. Good,
yes.
Good to have that list.
Yes.
That can be beneficial.
Oh, my gosh, it's pages. and it, so would it be, can I just do, without having a circumstance, go through these characteristics, qualities, or traits that I know are in me, and probably in every human, do a worksheet on just the trait without a situation? Or what would be the appropriate worksheet for that?
You know, it depends what comes to mind. I mean, it sounds like that exercise was very much like what we do with mind shifters. And
yeah.
if you've done any of our mind shifter work, a mind shifter is a thought about an issue in my life around which I have negative thoughts, and through resonance is the opportunity to surface, process, and work through or release those negative thoughts. So if you've got that list, you know, you could take take the first one that comes up, and maybe you've put that to some person in your life, or maybe you put that particular characteristic, whatever it is, on yourself. And so the most appropriate thing to do with that would be to do a worksheet where whoever that was about, whoever the object of attention of that is, would be number 1C. So you'd start the worksheet out, I, Michael, who am love, am feeling whatever the emotion is, and then getting down to number 1C, name that person and the situation, and then recognize
okay.
that what...
Go ahead.
Okay, so you got that so far? So then when you get to number 1C,
yeah.
I name whoever my mind thinks that's about. Now I know it's really about me. I've been in the dream of projecting this onto them. So now what I want to do is I want to determine what it is in me that I drive that false picture with, and it's always a goal. And so I look at what's the goal in that situation where this characteristic showed up, you know, projected into my brain image of that person, what's the goal I held for them? And so let's say it was someone who shows up, you know, angry and rageful. And so now I'm looking at, here was, you know, Aunt Jane, and she was always angry and rageful when I was a kid. What did I want from her? Well, there could be a variety of things that a child, let's say a five-year-old child looking at, you know, Aunt Jane in rage, the child might have wanted acknowledgement from Aunt Jane, loving acknowledgement. That would be one possible goal in that situation. So that would be the worksheet you use. the child might have wanted Aunt Jane to be loving to herself, might have had enough awareness to see what Aunt Jane was doing to herself. So the goal in the child's mind might have been for Aunt Jane to be loving to herself. It might have been for Aunt Jane to be loving to her. It might have been for Aunt Jane to be to speak gently about, you know, the person she was raging at. You know, there could be a wide variety of worksheets involved in any given situation. And so the more precisely you can identify in that circumstance what it is that you wanted, you know, if you were to verbalize, in this situation here, I remember I was 5 years old and we were at a family gathering and there was my mother over there and Aunt Jane is raging at mother. What would the five-year-old child have wanted Aunt Jane? What would be the ideal outcome in that situation? That's the best way I know to determine what the goal is. And so that's what would go in step three in the worksheet. There's the goal. And the reason I want to, you know, identify that goal, if you remember, we've talked about the Harvard research that shows that in a time frame where they can, you know, they've got somebody hooked up to electrodes and they're measuring brain cell firings. In the time frame where they can measure 10,000 brain cells firing off, literally 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity, what they determined was in that same time frame, which is about a tenth of a second, the conscious awareness was made up of about 9 bits of data, a little tiny fragment of what was going on overall within the mind. And if, in fact, in a situation where there are 10,000 brain cells firing, I'm only seeing my 9 bits of data, obviously something in me has determined which 9 bits of data I'm going to be looking at. And that's the goal. And when I look at that goal, and then I change that goal, I shift that goal by canceling it, then I collapse the construct of my mind made out of that pained shadow part. When that picture, that construct collapses, it collapses in on its own root. And at that instant, I have access to my shadow directly. A minute ago, I was projecting my shadow into my brain's image of Aunt Jane. But now that I've canceled the goal that I held for Aunt Jane, and to me this is just such a brilliant piece of information that Yeshua offered us 2,000 years ago. It's like, how did he ever come up with that one? But when I cancel that goal, the driver that determines that this 9 bits of my shadow will be used to build my brain's image of Aunt Jane, and I can cancel that. And if you imagine, it's not a very nice image, but it's one that everybody's aware of, so I use it all the time. Everybody remembers watching the Twin Towers go down on 9/11, and that huge building just dropped into its own footprint. The perceptual constructs of the mind, when the goal that elicits those constructs is canceled, then that whole structure, just like that building, drops into its own footprint. And that's when you've got access to your unconscious, or what was called by Jung, the shadow. And when I bring the shadow forward to conscious awareness, in the presence of active love, now the sun is shining on the shadow content and it dissolves. There's a great, if you listen to the description in the Course in Miracles, it's really powerful. And I've actually never seen anybody in 40 plus years of working with the Course that has understood that this is how forgiveness is done out of the Course. I didn't understand it out of using it or finding it in the Course. I first understood it from the first century Aramaic Yeshua. Then I can remember the day that I read that in the book. It's like, oh my God, there's forgiveness. And what it says is, let go all the things you think you want, i.e. cancel your goal, your trifling treasure, it refers to the goal as a trifling treasure, put away and leave a clean and open space within your mind. Collapse the thing that's filling the 9-bit mind and allow what's underneath it to come forward. Your trifling treasure put away, leave a clean and open space within your mind where the active presence of love can shine on the shadow and dissolve it. That's forgiveness.
Okay.
Took me 35 years to understand that from teaching the first century forgiveness process of Yeshua.
Wow.
And I certainly understand why the whole world, you know, especially based in the Greeks, told us, no, you let other people off the hook because of what you're feeling inside of you. You forgive them for your pain. Like, no, forgiveness has got nothing to do with letting them off the hook. It is a very active process by which I collapse my own pained perception that is just a reflection of my own shadow. I bring my own shadow to the presence of love. And in the presence of love, the shadow dissolves. And that's forgiveness. So each of those situations you have on your list, I'd look at who the person was that was involved when you originally did the list. And maybe there are more present objects of attention in your life. You know, it sounds like it was several years ago you did that. Perhaps there are more present objects of attention in your life. And you might do worksheets on both the person who's in that original thing and the person who played it out with you yesterday, or the person that you fear is going to play it out with you tomorrow. Each of those can be a perfectly appropriate place to do the forgiveness process.
Okay.
And that's how the shadows dissolve.
Okay, very, very helpful. I have one more thing that I want to get your feedback on.
And I'm going to ask Jeannie, if she would, if you'd make a note of her phone number, and we'll send you a link. There's actually a PowerPoint presentation that a student of mine created for us that explains that whole process. So I'll get Jeannie to send you a link to that, and I think that'll just reinforce everything that we're talking about. And I'm sure Jeannie's already put it in the notes as well. So, but go ahead.
Wonderful. I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday, and they were talking about survivor's guilt from parental suicide. And it was something that I hadn't ever heard about. And what came up was, it's okay for me to have a beautiful and happy life.
Yes.
And it just really resonated with me. So I don't know what the negative belief is or the thought that is underneath that. I guess it would be the opposite of this. That
let me ask you a
question. Might be the cause of the chronic pain.
That very likely could be the cause of the chronic pain. But question, so have you experienced a parental suicide?
Yes.
Okay. So breathing with you, holding a space of love for that healing, that's got to be a difficult, difficult place to be. And are you familiar with the Mind Shifter tool?
Yes.
Okay, so you've used it where you put the mind shifter on the left side of the page, write it, and then let everything that comes up on the other side just pour out on the page?
Yes, but I haven't been consistent with it.
Okay, so can I offer you a mind shifter then?
Please do.
Okay, so if you got a pen ready, was it your mom or your dad that left?
Mother.
Mother, okay. So whatever you called your mom, I'd start the mind shifter out with that. If it was mom, mother, whatever your favorite name was for her.
Okay.
Supports and approves of me. Living a delightful, fulfilling life.
Yeah, there's definitely some stuff coming up around that.
Yeah, so we'll breathe with you on that.
All that I thank you for, and that is all that I have right now at the moment.
Okay, well, we'll be breathing with you and holding the space as you write that and let all that process through. And, you know, it can be appropriate as well. I don't know how much you know about what was going on for your mom at that point, but, you know, you can also do a worksheet for her as though you were her and what she was facing and dealing with. And as you do that worksheet, dedicating energetically it to her healing, you can open the space for her in her soul essence to be freed of that energy.
Mm. Okay. Okay, wonderful. All right, I'm complete.
All right.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate it, Terry. Okay, blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mm-hmm. Holding the space, breathing deeply. And thank everybody in the community for being the space and holding the space for all the different kinds of healing that comes forward with everyone who participates in the show. And Ms. Jeannie, we're down to about 2 or 3 minutes, I think.
We do have another hand.
Well, let's see how quickly we can get a question in, and maybe we can just get something started that we can continue with tomorrow.
Okay, it's Terry Bowling, 336.
Hey, guys.
Hey there, Terry Bowling. Welcome, sir. How can we honor you today?
My goal here was just to offer the words just aren't big enough, just the thanks to you and Jeannie and everything that's been done around this work for so long. It's like, even as familiar as I am, it still just amazes me, like, with the worksheet that Jeannie helped me do. The last few days, you know, over purpose. Oh, my gosh, that tool was laying there, but of course I couldn't see it myself. I needed help to see what was right there available for me. And the way that Jeannie offered it, presented it, and worked with me was priceless. And it was so helpful to have the support and the way that she laid it out and evaluated me. It's like, wow, this is good stuff. Thank you, Jeannie. That was really a powerful exercise. And, extremely valuable and helpful for me.
You are welcome and deserving.
Well, that was just over the top. It was like, wow. I was sitting in awe for quite a while afterwards. It's like, man, that was a beautiful exercise. And in the 12-step rooms, they talk about the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. But I've modified that slightly as one of my mottos. It's the therapeutic value of one human helping another is without parallel. There's nothing else like it on the face of this earth. When two people come together to support each other, it's where it's at.
For sure.
You guys are the epitome of it. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
I think there was a fellow, Harry, about 2,000 years ago that said something like, when two or more are gathered in the name of healing.
Exactly.
I'm with you right on. That's it. That's what it takes.
Yep.
Nothing like a little support from our friends.
Like
yeah.
Nothing else like it. Absolutely nothing. Thank you, guys.
All right, Terry. Blessings. Any other thoughts for Terry? Jean? Big acknowledgement for you, young lady.
I just said you are welcome and deserving. Thank you for all the support you've given us.
Oh, yeah. And the way you unpacked that for me was so right on target, guys. Accolades.
Awesome.
That was beautiful.
I'm glad.
Thank you,
you're
and
welcome.
I've known you over all, these years.
We lost your voice, Terry.
You said you've known me for all these years, but then that your voice dropped.
I think we lost him.
Yeah.
And the show is getting ready to cut us off, so we'll just say thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
All right. Blessings. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Have a blessed one. Bye-bye.